Today on Changing Course, Associate Dean for the Herbert College of Agriculture, John Steyer. Thanks for coming in. You have a course, and the name of it is How to Feed the World. What were you thinking?
What was I thinking? So I have always had an interest in ecology and the environment. And about 10 or 15 years ago, I started teaching a class on lawns and environmental laws and things of that nature. And I'm looking at the growing population, and a number of us associate deans were challenged by Sunny Ramaswamy a couple 4 years ago or so from the U.S. Department of Agriculture about what are we doing to prepare students for 2050 when our population will hit at least 9 billion people, which means it will have tripled in my still relatively young lifetime. And yet, because of advances in wealth and so forth, these 9 billion people, which is about 1.5 to 2 billion more than we are at today, we will actually need to produce almost twice as much food as we do now, consuming more resources because people want to eat better. People are not content to eat rice once a day if they have money. They want to eat three times a day. They want to eat a wide variety of foods. They want to eat meat. They want to eat expensive meat in many cases. And so it will take a lot of resources to feed the world in 2050. I want to be part of the solution.
And you have this class, and it's called How to Feed the World. And in a moment, we're going to get into how you actually feed the world, if you can give us the secret. But I want to know, what inspired you to make this a class? Who's taking this class, and what do they want out of it?
The students who take the class come from all over campus. It's incredibly exciting. I've had French majors in there. I've had political science majors in there. A lot of sustainability students like to take the course. Business logistics students take the course. And a lot of agriculture majors take the course, ranging from food science to biosystems engineering to animal science. I even have construction science students taking the course. You want to ask me why?
Yes.
Because the students of today are knowledgeable in many ways about the world, and they are concerned. The latter part of the millennial generation, the incoming Generation Z, they are scared for their future. The world that they grew up in is a post-9/11 world. So they are predisposed to be scared. And then they hear these horror stories about the growing population. How are we going to feed people? They get worried. They want to be part of the solution also.
Well, I have to say, you know, as someone who was an undergrad at UT back in the 1980s, I didn't feel that impending sense of doom that I'm sort of, I have to admit, sort of feeling a little bit now about the global warming and the lack of water and food around the world. I mean, I was always aware of it, but it seems to me that the warning signs are just everywhere now.
Yeah, and it's a different age. It's a different culture. We are very much more connected through social media these days. There's a lot of things being said, a lot of things being written, a lot of things coming at people. And I think in some cases, people get a little bit overwhelmed with information. That also causes a little bit of fear. And then we just see these ecological movements and awarenesses change with each generation. In the 1970s, especially the early 1970s, very big ecological movement. It died down in the 80s and 90s, and it has risen again with concerns about global warming, climate change, whatever we want to call it, how to feed the world, in these types of issues that we'll have to face. I look at them as challenges. I am also cognizant of the fact that we have faced challenges before as a society. People thought that we could never overcome. And we have overcome. Why? Because we have people who care with a lot of brain power.
How is the class structured? Like, what does the timeline go? And at the end of it, how do you sum it all up?
Yeah, so this is fun. The class is structured with just a few lectures. So I'll provide about four lectures throughout the course. I'll have several guest speakers come in from international perspectives. So people who've lived and worked in Africa or Cambodia or Australia or South America or something like that. And they'll talk about the problems that they've seen or experienced. The person I brought in this year works with Donnie Smith, who was a former CEO of Tyson Foods, on a protein project in Rwanda. They set out through the Smith Center for International and Sustainable Agriculture at the UT Institute of Agriculture to just merely develop chickens as a protein source for people living in Rwanda. It turned out that people had to be trained how to raise the chickens, how to market the chickens, and deal with different cultural perceptions. So, for example, it turns out that the chickens we like, which are plump and juicy, are not what they're used to in Rwanda. They like them tough and stringy. So now we have to develop a different type of chicken. So there's all sorts of these problems. We watch a few videos on different perspectives, the World Wildlife perspective. We watch it from the perspective of nationalists who think that it is not our job to feed the rest of the world. The rest of the world needs to take care of themselves. And then much of the course is based on discussion. And so after watching those videos, for example, the students will discuss the pros and cons of us trying to help other countries in the world versus us ignoring the other countries of the world and the bad things that might result from that approach.
Well, what bad things might happen? Why not? Why not just say, like, you know, we've got enough food here and we can take care of ourselves. It's not our job to, you know, help country X.
Yeah, and so that's a good question because different students will give different answers. We'll have some students who say, this is important to us because if we don't feed those countries, terrorism results, and they don't want terrorism on our doorsteps. Other people will feel that it is important to do this to preserve the environment at large. They want to know that there are large wild places where baboons and giraffes can still roam rather than being eliminated in order to grow food. There's other people who feel that this is just the right thing to do. And I think that's particularly in the volunteer spirit.
Are your classes packed? Is it full? I mean, it sounds like every kind of major is in there. If you have French majors, you've got a little bit of everything in there. Is it generally a full class?
The class is challenging because we want to keep it small. The students want to keep it small. That's one of the things that the students always say that they value is keeping it small because it relies so much on discussion. And we get so intense into the topics of discussion, talking about race in agriculture and feeding the world, talking about gender issues, talking about politics, talking about economics of how to feed the world. People have to feel comfortable. And so it takes a couple weeks for people to feel comfortable enough to truly express their views. But it's only when, Todd, that we can get people to truly express their views that we can actually deal with the obstacle at hand and move forward.
How do you feed the world? I mean, if you could sum it up in some way. I mean, it sounds like we're not feeding it now. What about 2050?
Yeah, so this is one of the questions that invariably comes up. We have hungry people in the United States right now. Why are we worried about feeding the rest of the world when we've got hungry people here right in the United States? And this is why we have to look at why people are hungry and why people might be hungry in the future. So people who might be being fed right now might not be able to be fed in the future as climate change occurs or as politics political changes occur. So, for example, maybe the area starts to become drier. We've seen that before with ancient cultures such as the Anasazi here in what is now the United States. In some cases, the politics change. And so one of the topics we've been talking about recently is the approximately 12.8 or more million people hungry at any one time because of conflict in places like Syria, in places like the Congo Democratic Republic. And so we have to look at those things and realize it's very difficult to achieve 100%, but in many cases, some relatively small changes might move the needle quite a bit. One of the primary areas on Feeding the World that we can make a difference on is reducing food waste. So we look at in developed nations such as the United States, the amount of food that we throw out because it doesn't look pretty anymore, or we don't want to eat leftovers, or we get very large portions at the restaurant. The grocery stores are part of this issue. So, for example, as produce starts to turn a little spotty or it's misshapen, the grocery stores aren't going to sell it here. So that becomes wasted food. Whereas to a person who's really hungry, they don't care if the carrot's got a bifurcated taproot versus a single taproot. They just want to eat something. And so some of the grocery stores, we're saying, instead of throwing that food out, now are working within the local communities to make that food accessible to people. In undeveloped countries, food waste largely comes in the form of inability to harvest the crop because they don't have the machines to do it. And so the crop might rot in the fields or whatever if they can't get out there to do it. A lot of the crop is wasted because of rodents, pests, and so forth, because they don't have the pesticides that are used in the developed countries, which the pesticide use engenders a whole other set of discussions. In some cases, they don't have the transportation. So the chicken project in Rwanda, even though they can raise the chickens, and there's actually maybe an urban market 50 miles away in a large city, they cannot get the chickens there because they don't have the roads. They don't have good paved roads to actually physically transport the chickens.
Do you feel optimistic about feeding the world in the future? And not just because it feels good to feel optimistic, but I need some reasons, some real reasons why you feel optimistic if you do.
I feel optimistic in feeding the world, not just because we have tended to surmount difficult obstacles as a society before, but because we have ideas, very workable ideas on how to get there, such as reducing food waste. In some cases, it will be new technology, maybe smarter irrigation, maybe better crops, maybe growing the right crop in the right place. For example, we've had for years somewhat failed experiments of trying to grow crops in third world countries that aren't adapted for there. For those areas, but we need to let the people who live there and have raised native crops for a long time go back to their native crops. I do feel confident because we have people that care, and we will be able to think these things through. Some of our sticking points are going to be the politics and the economics, and those two issues will always be paramount. The other things we can largely deal with.
Do you feel the students you're teaching now are going to stay interested in this topic?
I think the students that I'm working with now are going to stay interested in this. Some of the students will take it because it's a free elective. It's not a requirement at this point for anybody, although nutrition may start making it a requirement for their students. So students take it because they're interested in it right now. And I've had a number of students actually switch their post-graduation plans because of this. So, for example, a student who is planning to become a veterinarian will change her plans and instead go into international agriculture or international food or something. Another student who was in the sustainability area is now working in community food sheds in Colorado. So people will change what they do because of this class.
So this class is offered in the autumn semester. When is it offered?
The class is offered every Tuesday and Thursday afternoon from 3:40 until 4:55 p.m.
Our guest again, Associate Dean for the Herbert College of Agriculture, John Steyer. For Changing Course, which is a production of WUOT, I'm Todd Steed.